Welcome, Brendan.
What? Welcome
to episode 160.
Who are you to invite me? I'm the one who knocks, Alan.
Well, you're welcome after you knock.
Oh, okay, thanks.
Yeah.
So glad to be here.
Episode 160 of the Not a Thing podcast. Recording as of, right now-ish. Pretty good, right?
We did it.
Yay, recording. It's fun. If you would like to see how fun or hear how fun in person, let us know. We'd love to have you on the show. And all you have to do is get a microphone, I guess. I mean, you don't even have to have a microphone. I think Ted once even joined the show from an iPad, like using the Google Hangouts app.
Really? We let that happen? Man, we have no standards.
Well, if you would like to join us, iPad or not, just let us know, or let the Hell 900 bot know on our website. Tweet at us, Facebook us, all that kind of good stuff, and we'll have you on the show.
To be clear, tweet at Alan, at NiceHat. I am currently not checking my Twitter account. I'm on a Twitter hiatus, a twatus. So White Lightning is going dark.
Well, you can tweet at the Not a Thing podcast Twitter handle, Not a Thing Cast, and I will still pick that up anyway. or the Facebook page, for that matter, and we'll figure it out. But in the meantime, let's talk about some stuff that has happened this week that are probably not things. There's a thing did happen this week, yesterday, in fact, the first Democratic debate of the election season for 2016. So the major players and some other folks who I'd never heard of decided to debate yesterday, and you know, we can talk about the debates, but what I'm going to talk about is something that I didn't even know happened. But apparently, I think it was Samsung that was related to this. It might have even been related to Oculus, because I know they're the Gear VR thing is somewhat being developed in conjunction with Oculus Rift. But Gear VR by Samsung is a thing which turns certain Samsung phones, I think it's whatever the newest ones are, into it'll split it into two screens, and it has enough horsepower to make to stream two fields of video. And then if you stick it in their mount, you essentially have a VR helmet or visor, I guess, that sits in front of your face. And then if you move your head up and down or whatever, the motion sensors in it will track, and so it will alter the video, you know, appropriately. And the reason I'm bringing this up is that supposedly the Democratic debate was filmed and streamed with VR in mind. And so there was an article in, I think it was Polygon, about someone reviewing that experience, and I didn't even need to read it to know that this is not a thing.
Nope.
It's not, well, first of all, it's not really VR, right? All it's really just 3D projection.
No, it's R.
Yeah.
It's just R.
Well, it's because you're restricted to the camera angles that that they're picking. So I think they were using stereoscopic, like 360 degree cameras. But so you could like turn around and look at the people in the audience and watch their reactions, I guess.
Yeah, you could see them reacting to the implosion of Lincoln Chafee's campaign. That was the first time I thought, who's Lincoln Chafee? And then within 15 minutes, that was the last thing to worry about Lincoln Chafee.
Yeah.
I never really think of Anderson Cooper as a hardball hitter, but yeah, he verbally chokeslammed that fool.
Well, I think the there are a lot of it exposed a lot of interesting stuff about virtual reality, but then a lot of stuff that really does not work. I mean, first of all, you can't talk to anyone with this thing on your face. because if you're sitting in a room with someone else, even if they're wearing it as well, you pretty much have to take it off to talk to them. I mean, you could turn towards where they are, I suppose, but it doesn't draw them in space or anything. So it's just, you're just yelling out into the darkness. I mean, you may not even have a person there, which is...
You probably don't if you're wearing that. Actually, you shouldn't, because it looks ridiculous. You don't want other people around seeing you while you're wearing that.
In addition, they mentioned that he was trying to kind of live tweet, and you can't do that either because you essentially already have a screen in front of your face. So you'd have to remove it in order to do anything. It doesn't lend itself to what I think of, what most people think of as kind of a fairly passive experience, right? Watching TV is fairly passive. You don't, as much as they try and, you know, get people to do the two-screen experience and things like that.
Nobody wants the two-screen experience.
Or I want a two-screen experience, but my second screen is like bejeweling.
Yeah, I'm playing Boom Beach while I'm watching some other crap.
More likely I'm browsing Reddit. It's fine. But yeah, I think virtual reality is a very long way to go. And I think there's a lot of ways that it can be used, but watching a debate of all things, possibly one of the least dynamic things ever, it's not the most ambitious use of the technology, shall we say. But I still think that if you were watching it, I think you would want a lot more control about where, not only where you could look, but what you could do with like aiming the cameras and stuff. And that's not really feasible with anyone, you know, unless you're the like director to be able to choose where to look, or if it was a completely generated kind of thing, right? If it's a virtual conference, essentially everything is computer generated, then you could move around and look at whatever you wanted and stuff. But for the most part, it's still going to be constrained to wherever the cameras are. Because if you're going to have people in the audience, you know, they're going to be places where the cameras can't be. So it's got some kinks to work out.
So you're telling me that politicians and mainstream media people are not able to properly use cutting edge technology? I am shocked.
Not a thing, in other words. I don't know. I still think virtual reality is still too much of a kind of toy, and not something that can be used in any, you know, real kind of fashion yet. I think augmented reality has some neat applications and thoughts, but no one knows how to do that or even explain it. So we'll just move on, keep going, hopefully during the Democratic debate there were not ads for DraftKings or FanDuel that were also broadcast in VR, but there probably were. I didn't actually watch it, so I don't know. But I'm sure if you've watched any TV or looked at any internet or... or generally been related to any kind of media, especially any media around sports, ads that I keep seeing are for FanDuel and DraftKings, which are advertised as daily fantasy football sites. And I remember looking into this briefly about the way it works, because they let you draft essentially whenever you want. For every day's match, but there's no there's no caps. So essentially you're just picking your all-star team, which everyone else is picking. So unless you are amazingly good at foretelling the future and choosing people that are like, you know, surprise stars and things like that, you're probably going to end up with everyone else and probably not winning all that much. It was discussed in a couple articles. We saw we're linking one this week, but I saw one a while ago that was saying the biggest scam is that you can't take out money when you win. You have to take it out after a certain point. So if you're betting the minimum or whatever it is for the day, you can't take that much out if you win. You have to have won something like 5 times the minimum or something, which is less likely. So more likely is you just keep losing, and then eventually you're out, you're bankrupt, and then all of the money that you've put in is gone, which is probably what they want. And if this sounds familiar to you, it's because it's probably how casinos and other gambling institutions work. And so somehow fantasy football escapes the gambling the gambling rules by chance or putting them in the category of skill games, because you are kind of picking things, although for the most part I don't know. It just seems super bad and dirty, and for something that has so many ads on TV, you know, somebody's making money off of this, and it's probably not us.
Well, it's the people that are being investigated for insider trading. The people who get the inside data before the game and then go bet, who work for DraftKings and then go bet at FanDuel with their inside information.
Yeah, we noticed that in the article as well. There were at least two instances or a couple instances of it that that people at one company or the other were betting and winning you know, large sums of money, which, you know, is crazy, right? And it comes from an industry, and it is an industry. There are plenty of people that do fantasy football, us included, but we also don't like pay into it, so or make any money off of it, which is good because I've not been doing great this year.
Actually, in the one money league I'm in this year, I am in first place.
Oh, very so nice. Okay.
Got that little skin in the game.
Yeah, but fantasy football is the kind of thing that's fun, and it's meant to be kind of, you know, you're messing around with your friends and turning it into anything more than like a casual, you know, maybe you win something, but most likely you're just, you know, it's just kind of price of admission kind of a thing I think is acceptable. Turning it into a, you know, let's win money kind of thing every day, it's really just a gambling enterprise, and it's a gambling enterprise that is not regulated at all. So there will most likely be repercussions for this. I think the investigations, like you were saying, are already in progress regarding some things. It's just, you know, if it's going to be gambling, just call it gambling, and then people can at least decide that that's what it is, and not some kind of, you know, like way to, you know, make really any amount of money. Plus, it would mean maybe a little more advertising diversity watching TV. I see one of those ads like every commercial break. Essentially, it's really terrible. I should probably stop watching, like, TV.
That's what I did.
Maybe. In any case, we move from stuff in the United States to stuff in China. There's an interesting fad, fashion trend, you can sort of say, that's been popping up for the last couple months. I guess it was mentioned by the New York Times and some other folks that they were noticing people who had clipped little things that looked like sprouts, like plant sprouts, to their head. It looks like a plant is growing out of their head, and it's becoming enough of a fad that they're it's making news headlines. I guess there was a festival just recently in China, and there were tons of people kind of doing it. I don't know if there's any specific kind of source for it or anything or reasoning. I think it's funny that they have plants growing out of their heads, mostly because you know, having stuff grow in an environment so horribly smoggy must be very difficult. So
yeah, but they're not using actual plants; they're using plastic crap, which clearly was made in China.
Probably right. It's
I could potentially see calling this a thing if it was real plants. Mm. I mean, it's still ridiculous and stupid.
Yeah.
But I can kind of understand that.
Sure.
But just putting plants, they're like garbage pail kids. Or Cabbage Patch Dolls, whatever. Same thing.
Wow. Garbage pail kids. The little cards with the stickers on them, and you... Yes. I think I agree with you. It would have been a good trend if it were actual plants. On the, at the same token, I feel like it's...
I think this could just be China trolling America. Like, this isn't a real story. See how many the New York Times reported on it.
Yeah.
How many other people can we get to think that we're doing this for real?
Well, they've hooked the Not a Thing podcast anyway. Not bad. Well, maybe.
I mean, when you have that many people in that size of a space, in any size of space, you're going to have weird stuff going on. Too many people. Too many cooks.
Oh my gosh. Well, at least all of the cooks will be wearing clothes. At least if it's going to be reported in Playboy, which I guess is still a relevant media thing, I guess.
It exists. I don't know if it's relevant.
Well, they're trying to retake their relevancy. They've announced this week that they're moving to be a completely PG-13 kind of enterprise. So no more nudity in Playboy, in the magazine. And I this is in response to their circulation numbers dropping from like a high of 5 million to 800,000 per year or something to that effect is what I read. I guess on the Playboy.com website, the non-paid areas of the website, they've already removed all the nudity, so you could legitimately read Playboy for the articles. And in doing so, they say that their circulation online anyway has jumped above 15 million. So they're saying that, okay, well, we'll apply the same logic to print, and I'm sure the print numbers will go up. Probably not, but an interesting
print
play.
Media is but I have play. To say, I've always found the articles to be interesting. Like they have some well-written stuff there. That's always the joke is you get it for the articles, but they actually are good articles.
The interviews specifically, yeah. I think are really good because they tend to be very, very candid. For whatever reason, I think it's because they tend to be kind of longer format too. So you get a little more, or they have more opportunity to get past whatever the kind of talking point shell a person has, especially if they're trying to promote something, and get to actual, you know, real talk. But I don't
it's
know.
It's like podcasts before podcasts.
It's exactly what I was going to say. It's like, oh, yeah, yeah. Or I could just listen to a podcast about them, and then it's even better because I get to hear their actual voice. Yeah.
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 Not our podcast, but, you know, famous podcasts that interview famous people.
Well, thank God the Not A Thing podcast will, you know, we're not taking this non-nude stance. I mean, we're a podcast, so you can't tell anyway, but, but you know, just, you know, nudity, it's a thing. Not on Playboy anymore, but still a thing.
As long as there are people, there will be nudity.
And as long as this law stays on the books in California, a new law that was signed this week, we'll still have the ability to keep that nudity private if we want. There's an interesting development. Usually when we're talking about the government and technology, as we were at the beginning of the show, usually the government and politicians don't understand it, or at least make weird and irrational choices about how to wield technology. But this week, California, our state, is leading the way with a new law that was just signed this week by Jerry Brown that says that state agencies, they're required to obtain warrants in order to get essentially any electronic data. So email, any kind of data communications, to search a mobile phone or a laptop, you need a warrant. And this is kind of a landmark thing because computers and computing technology and data were kind of in a gray area. I mean, the privacy laws exist and specifically enumerate like personal possessions and like correspondence. And if it's like paper mail or correspondence over a phone and you need a wiretap, but stuff that's electronic, because things exist on different servers and may not be in like possession of a person, like physically possessed by a person, they have been in this kind of gray area. And this law says, nope, it's not gray anymore. It still belongs to whoever it belongs to, and you still need a warrant to get it. So I think that's really cool. Interesting, the law also introduces not only the specific data around the context that they're trying to search, so like an email or a laptop, but also the metadata is mentioned as requiring a warrant as well. So tracking a person via, say, cell phone records to say that, you know, you were in this cell tower and that cell tower, so you're traveling in this direction, that kind of thing is also requires a warrant to obtain. So California is really, it's the first and widest widest application of the personal privacy rights that I've seen electronically. The ACLU is, you know, rah 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 all over it. EFF is big. A lot of companies are kind of for it too. Internet companies, and I think that's because they get so many requests from law enforcement and other agencies for turning over data. And by codifying it in this way, it at least makes it to have a standard process. You have to have a warrant, and then it has to be turned over in a specific way. So I think that's why it was being pushed. So it isn't 100% altruistic. They just want a process around it too. But that works in our favor. So hooray the internet and California for pulling that together.
We did it. Come up with some good ideas when you run out of water.
Now, interestingly enough, it does. It I think this only applies to, or it applies to state agencies, but I don't know if that means that cities can still do whatever they want with it. I think that I don't know if the state law overrides the city law, or it probably is going to result in lawsuits and having that figured out in the courts. But because we talked about in the past, Oakland, I think, has come up a couple times in that they're really ahead of using the Oakland police forces ahead of using technology in different ways. Like they were using license plate readers. And we had the story about their hard drive that was storing their license plate images filling up, if I'm remembering right. But also they were trying to buy a drone or some other kind of drone surveillance. There have been a couple cities in California that have deployed the Stingray systems, that are the ones that masquerade cell towers in order to listen in on cell conversations and otherwise track people. So I'm not sure exactly what the what this law does to those kinds of agencies, city or county level agencies, but that's something to keep an eye on anyway. But in the meantime, yay California. It's a great state. I love living here.
I'm not leaving.
Well, I'm not sure if this was a California company, but we saw an interesting story about kind of electronic warfare, but less from the an email and data perspective, and actually using electronic means of disrupting stuff, specifically UAVs and drones. And it's a company that is making a shoulder-mounted, I mean, it essentially looks like a rifle with an antenna stuck on the front of it. It has a sight on it, and you would point it at the UAV in question and pull the trigger, and it must just spam out radio waves that disrupt a UAV drone's ability to navigate. They mentioned that it throws out radiation in the GPS and ISM bands, which I don't know what that stands for, but it must be some telecommunication thing. There's a video on their site which is 100% horrible, but it's, you know, it explains what it does and how it does it. It's just really, really boring. for something about drone interdiction, it could be a lot cooler, let's just say.
But I would not contribute to that Kickstarter.
the video shows the person, the security guard, whatever, pointing the kind of rifle with the antenna on it at the drone, pulls the trigger, and then gently guides it to the ground. I guess what it does, it doesn't quite make sense. I mean, depending on what it's actually doing to the drone, it looks like what it does is it essentially bubbles it, and it can't tell where it is, and then guiding it to the ground is I'm not actually sure how that works. I would think I was thinking when I'd read it and when I'd seen the picture that it's essentially throwing like an EMP out, you know, kind of in a...
No, that would be too cool. That's not what this is doing.
Instead, it seems to kind of scramble whatever guidance systems the drone gets, and it puts it in kind of a fail-safe mode, and the drone, instead of doing whatever it would do, respond to commands from the base station or whatever, it just goes straight down. And I think that would depend on the drone and what its failsafe state is, because I don't know. I'm in my cursory kind of, you know, research about drones and stuff. Most of them have a fly home failsafe, so they detect where they've been in relation to where they are, and if it loses radio signal with the base station, or the base station runs out of battery, or it's going to run out of juice, the drone itself is going to run out of juice, it promptly turns around and beelines it straight back where it was coming from. I would think the same thing would happen if it got hit with whatever radio waves it was there. I don't know. It just doesn't seem like it would really do anything. And also, if you can point a radio wave gun at a drone and guide it downward, you could also just point a shotgun at said drone, blow it out of the sky.
We've discussed it before, Alan. That's not a viable option. It's noisy. It's messy and dangerous.
Yes, you're right. It is dangerous. That is dangerous. But I think.
But I would be much more satisfied shooting with a shotgun. Everything's more satisfying when you shoot it with a shotgun.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much, pretty much. It's funny because I've been playing Destiny. I've only done it twice. I've only played it for like, you know, a few, 5 or 6 hours so far. But there's a class of gun that looks kind of like the one that this thing is based on. I'm sure that there is some crossover in the design process as they were building it. But the one in the game is much cooler.
Speaking of cool games, I did get my hands briefly on the Star Wars Battlefront demo.
Yeah,
that was out this weekend.
Yeah,
real good. It's a thing. They nailed it.
Oh no, it's 100% a thing.
It's so pretty.
I downloaded it and played it for quite a while on Thursday night. I'm not going to say exactly how many hours, but I found that as fun as it is, and as nice as they've made a lot of things, in the you know, related to Star Wars, they're definitely using the intellectual properties as good as they can get on it. I am terrible at it.
Yeah, that's hard.
Just,
but it was a demo. I mean, you can't. I feel like it's gonna be a lot bigger.
It's also horribly unbalanced, so I think that will help. It plays there's kind of a like smaller level that you're supposed to kind of cut your teeth on and get used to the controls and everything, and I was very bad at that, but I was at least leveling when I was doing that, and then when I played the Attack on Hoth level, which is, you know, the AT-AT walkers and everything else, I don't think I ever played it in a match. I'm pretty sure I never played it in a match where even one of the AT-ATs fell.
But it was super satisfying using all the other vehicles. Also jump packs.
Yeah. The I think it suffers from what I've found in a lot of shooters, which is people are not playing in an objective based way. They're playing to get their kill death ratio as high as it could be.
Yep.
So that was also fantastically frustrating because I think the. It's not that the spawn points are necessarily already known, but it's the kind of thing where I think the pathing is pretty weird because you can't choose your spawn point, so you kind of spawn wherever you end up, and there are just some places where it's just a killing field, and there's no way to really effectively kind of breach those zones.
It was pretty fun playing as the Imperials.
Oh yeah.
when someone would get the Luke Skywalker power up and it would play the like triumphant Star Wars music.
Yeah.
And you just think, oh shit. You're playing as the bad guys.
Yeah.
And then you just came running at you with a lightsaber and you're just some stormtrooper with a blaster.
Yep.
And it's not gonna end well.
Yeah. I think it does have the same I remember the same amount of joy when I played X-Wing and TIE Fighter, the flight simulator more games. I really enjoyed those. I don't think I have the controls down when I was flying the TIE Fighter or the X-Wing on the levels. I don't know.
I will call bullshit. I will call bullshit on one feature of that, which is the Rebels have the option to call in a Y-Wing squadron to do some bombing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was flying in a TIE Interceptor and they outran me. It's not possible.
No.
In this fictional universe that's not real, it's bullshit.
Everyone knows the Y-Wings are slow and the Interceptors are fast. That's why they're called Interceptors. It's because they intercept things. Come on.
Nerds!
Now, if it was an A-Wing, sure, it'd get past me, sure.
it's what it was designed for. Point, counterpoint.
Oh my god. Yes, Star Wars, it's a thing. I'm probably still gonna get it. I'm gonna be horrible at it, but I'm probably still gonna get
You'll
it.
You'll get better. Give yourself some time, Alan. You have a job and a wife and a life to do things. There are 14-year-olds playing all the time.
It's very true. It's very true. At least the game didn't, or at least I don't know. Maybe I'm too new with it and I haven't hooked stuff up right. But it doesn't seem to talk at me. Like I didn't have to mute anyone. So at least people were playing, but I didn't have to hear them talk about it.
Star Wars is not a place for hate speech, so I'm glad they did that.
Well, another place that is not a place for hate speech, at least as long as Mark Watney's around, is Mars. We're moving sort of into spoiler territory at this point. Over into spoiler land for The Martian, which I saw this week, and you saw opening weekend, I assume?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I liked it a lot. I read the book maybe a month ago, or maybe it was even more than that. I think it was 2 months ago, because it was ahead of, it was well ahead of this, it was right around when the first trailer came out for it, so it was at least a couple months ago, and I remember thinking, yeah, this is gonna be a good movie. Like I think it might, I mean, it definitely handled some things as a movie better than I think the book handled. But I think that it complements it a little bit. Did you read the book?
I did not read the book. I did not see a single trailer. I went into it completely cold. All I knew was Matt Damon on Mars,
mm-hmm.
Ridley Scott. That was about it.
That's really all you need. It's a great, that's a great setup. Like I would see the movie just based on that.
I think now having seen it and now knowing that Michael Pena was in it, I'd go see it anyways. I've decided that Michael Pena is the new bellwether for whether movies are good or not. Because he is great in every movie I've seen him in recently.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he's on fire, for sure. But I enjoyed the book because it's very science-y. And someone mentioned that it's very kind of hard sci-fi in that you take the science is extremely authentic to the point where it's kind of like arduous in the book anyway. They're just pages upon pages of how he problem solves his way out of Mars, and it's I think in the book because you have kind of time to go over every page, it's exhaustive. And I think, but it's done in a way that, you feel like you identify with him problem solving. So it doesn't feel that heavy, although it is very heavy. They kind of gloss over a lot of it in the movie, which is fine because I think from a pacing point of view, it works a lot better. They've also shortened a few sequences that were like, oh, come on, now this again, really? it was what I felt when reading it as a book. And I think that also helped. I just thought a lot of the science was really good. Everything looked great. Like, all the shots of Mars look amazing. All of the shots in space are great. All the artificial gravity stuff they did was awesome. I mean, the first time, I think it's Beck goes, or maybe it was Rivers, goes down the ladder, and it's like, why are you going backwards into that tube? That must be really awkward. And I realize, oh, it's because so her feet are pointed downward once gravity starts kicking in, going down the ladder. Oh my God, it's great. Yeah, it's that kind of movie. There's lots of nice little touches that are good.
It made me excited. I mean, I've always been excited about space.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we talk about space a lot on this podcast. I hope it's a movie that can inspire younger people to want to be more interested in space.
Yeah. I think it's interesting. And if, I don't know, this is as spoilery as we get for this is that at the end of the film, there is a speech that that I think is, it's definitely talking directly to the people watching the movie and anyone who's young that wants to be an astronaut, to say like, this is what being an astronaut is like, and how it's, and putting it in terms that I think are still kind of human attainable, that it's like, it's not a insurmountable series of things. It's just a bunch of things that you have to overcome, and that's what works. And I think that's a really good message to send. And it talks, again, in that way, exactly as you said, like, to young people, hey, go to space, because this is what it takes. It's not impossible. You just have to have the drive and want to do it. And it's inspiring. The only thing I will ding it for is that that's actually not really in the book. Not exactly. I mean, that is a thing that's said maybe a third of the way through the book. But the thing that ended the book was much more of a rally of humanity to save this one guy was the kind of capstone moment at the end of the book. The speech, there's a speech that they used in the trailer, which I don't know if you went back and watched them afterwards, but
no, I should though.
One of the trailers is, he's talking about, and this is why, as soon as I saw the first trailer, I was like, I'm not watching any more trailers because you just spoiled the end of the book. But the speech at the end of the book is him talking about how he was going to die, but he never felt alone because everyone was trying to save him. And that's what humanity does. They try and save each other. So the book is much more humanity saves ourselves, yeah. And the movie was more, let's go to space. And I'm fine with both of those messages, so I'm actually fine with both the book and the movie as their own things.
I think the movie covered both those topics.
Yeah, I think so.
It definitely ended on the let's go to space.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that was the whole movie.
Yeah, that's true. I liked... I'm trying to think, you know, because I liked a lot of all, I mean, there were a lot of people in it, and it was fun. Like, I didn't expect Sean Bean to be in it.
And he lived. That's two Sean Bean movies in a row that he survived. this and that piece of shit Jupiter Ascending. And I saw something online about how Matt Damon keeps needing to be saved in movies.
Yeah.
Like he was Private Ryan and Saving Private Ryan.
Yep.
He was the guy lost in Interstellar.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's in this movie. He's getting typecast as a damsel in distress.
How much money has the U.S. spent to save Matt Damon?
So much money. That, and I also saw someone photoshopped the Martian poster with the doll from Team America.
Oh, very nice. Matt Damon.
It's well done. Yeah.
Yeah. I liked it. It was really good. I saw it in regular old 2D, and I think
The way movies are supposed to be seen.
I think that's fine. I don't think there's anything that you need to see in 3D. You especially don't need to see the self surgery bit in 3D.
No, that was a rough start.
Yes, kind of a rough start in the movie. So,
no, full recommendation.
Absolutely. And I think full recommendation for this show, again, you know, for the 160th some odd time, it was a good show this week, Brendan.
I like it. We did it.
I will talk to you next time.
Till next time, Alan.